The local take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is joining with PBS to present their documentary, The Black Church, airing on local PBS stations this upcoming Tuesday and Wednesday. We spoke with Dr. Jewel P. Benson Borders about the historic Wheat Street Baptist Church, and this morning we're speaking with Apostle Darrell Winston from Greater Works Assembly in Atlanta, Georgia. Apostle Winston, welcome back to the Local Take.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Can you share what the Black Church means to you and what is your relationship with the Black Church?
Okay, thank you. The Black Church, it has served as our spiritual womb, spiritual, social, and even cultural, and even sometimes political womb of our community. And because it gave birth to us spiritually, and it gave birth to our institutions. And it means everything to me in terms of its significance, in terms of the foremost cause for our development. Black Church has created for us, and as in terms of the womb of our experience, a place for our created atmosphere for us to emerge and to become. And my relationship with the Black Church has been as someone who was raised in our experience in the prophetic tradition of the Black Church all my life, and then even now as a leader, pastor, and even as a leader to leaders. I continue in the tradition of forefathers and mothers who, during the antebellum and even Reconstruction, our churches became the dominant force, spiritual force, driving force in our sojourn here in America.
Now, you mentioned growing up in the Black Church. Can you describe what a week was like, what that meant in your youth, what it meant to grow up in a Black church? Because I don't think people realize just how much, you know, growing up that you were actually at church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had some of the elders in our family growing up in the Baptist church. Mm-hmm. Many of them were church leaders, so either church clerks or servant in leadership role. They either built churches with their own hands, mm-hmm. and provided were the educators and teachers and training. They were in Christian education. So my mother and father, of course, shaped in that tradition, passed that on to us. And so we were not dropped off at church. We worshiped at church. And then at an early age, my mother and father said I would 1 minute listen to the Temptations and the Jackson Five, and another minute when my father would listen to the sermons of the great preachers like Reverend C.L. Franklin and others, Reverend Jasper Williams, that I would be, I would sit down awestruck. And so at an early age, I was one of the children that always enjoyed worshiping in church, the preaching, the singing, and the culture, of course, the food and the fellowship. And so there was never a time in my experience as a child of the 60s when we did not see the reinforcement of the church, albeit now looking back, there were different models of the Black Church, but it had such a dominant role because we were picked up and taken to Sunday school, of course, and vacation Bible school, and just about any activities that the church was involved in. The church had a very strong thrust into the community, into the youth. So our life, the church for us, was the center of our activities.
It really was. I remember Vacation Bible School fondly. It was what you did in the summers where all your friends were, so you wanted to be there. Now,
right.
Was your call to the ministry something that you accepted readily? How did you come to lead this church?
That's a good question. No, it wasn't something I accepted readily. I was first called into the ministry in 1982 in Germany. And it was such a numinous experience, spiritual. You know, in our tradition, there are many, for instances, of the call that we read about, how conversion experiences. But for me, I sat there as I started experiencing these supernatural visitations, if you will, dreams and even visions. And I said within myself, oh, no, I will not do that. And as I went through various experiences, I remember saying within myself, I'll be a deacon, but I certainly don't want to be a preacher. And so it was not something that I readily accepted. It became, I guess, for me, it took about 3 years before I yielded and accepted my call into the ministry. And from that was 1985 when I accepted my call into the ministry. And then in 1986, I preached my initial sermon. But for me, it was not something that I entered into lightly. I was saying, woe is me, I'm a person of unclean lip, or there's no way, because of the pressure, because of the enormous sacrifice. But most people who I know who legitimately call in terms of the hand of God on their lives and what we call surrendering to the will of God, it was not a, it was reluctant, they were reluctant, if you will.
And now, how did you come to Greater Works Assembly?
I moved back to Atlanta, grew up in Atlanta, moved back in 1994. And having been for the served 6 years in Washington, D.C., one of the foremost African-American churches in the nation, steeped in community involvement, Union Temple Baptist Church in D.C., historic Anacostia. And that experience there prepared me for cutting-edge ministry. So when I got back to Atlanta, I had declined to pastor other churches in the Midwest and another church in Alabama. And after prayer, I knew that the church was at a very pivotal point, because with the 60s being our models and the 70s and the 80s, but I knew that what God had given me to do in terms of church and ministry, I needed to be a part of what I call a move of God into the 21st century. And that's when, that through prayer and fasting, God gave me Greater Works Assembly, or Great Church of Greater Works, based on John 14 and 12 that says, marvel not at what I do, but greater works than these shall you do. So I knew that we had put a lot of emphasis on the religion about Jesus and not enough emphasis on the religion of Jesus. And we had to have a boldness that went beyond the benediction into the missions, into the streets, and into every facet of society. And this, of course, was shaped by the churches in the 50s and 60s that were action-oriented ministries.
Now, you mentioned an action-oriented ministry, and your church is very, very active in the community. Was this a deliberate part of the church's, you know, mission or mandate? And why was community activism so very important when you started this church?
For me, because it was true to the origin of the Black church in its involvement, and by being a spiritual and a cultural womb, we knew that we had to draw upon the time-honored tradition and spiritual models of the historic Black church. Hart Nelson talked about the models and the schemes of the Black churches that were present in the 60s and the 70s. So we knew then the model that we chose was the prophetic model, the community model that was rooted in the biblical prophetic tradition that the church has called to, as one who will be liberating, a church that will preach liberation, a church that will be engaged and be on the front line fighting for the oppressed and for the underserved and for the voiceless. So we knew that we had to embrace the mandate of Jesus, the high mandate of Jesus. And what Dr. Howard Thurman, and he wrote a book called Jesus and the Disinherited, the Disenfranchised and the Voiceless. So our whole motto was steeped in addressing the societal ills that was not concerned about the hellish conditions and the unjust practices that enslaved people previously, but then also oppressed people in the present. So we had to draw upon that model.
Now, what do you see as the future of the Black church? And I ask this, I think about the question that comes up regularly, what is the future of HBCUs? You know, what is the future of these uniquely African-American institutions now that we can, you know, join other places and other things? I know people who do yoga on Sunday. I have a friend who is a practicing Buddhist. What is the future of the Black church when there are other places that people now go for that spiritual awakening?
Mm-hmm. As you know, especially among us, we're not monotheistic, no monolithic in our faith, but now with there being other faiths that many of our many people of color have gravitated toward, I think we have to be true to the call, the mission of our church, which has been both priestly and prophetic in terms of our function, but we must increase our prophetic function and start addressing societal ills and be more aggressive in addressing the wider community. We got to be more aggressive. We have now, in certain instances, we've been more inward focused, which is the priestly function, you know, the teaching again and discipling. But we must also be rooted and grounded and maintain a delicate balance to engage the whole person, the whole man, and be concerned about effectuating change within and without, which means then that we have to become the liberation church. And much of our emphasis on liberation is to make sure that the church does not dive into otherworldliness or escapism or see no evil escapism under the guise of loving Jesus. So we have to be concerned about the whole person. We must be concerned about the poor and underserved. We must be concerned about injustice and gender inequality. We must be concerned about these things that break God's hearts. And so when the church, African-American church, becomes true to our mission and mandate and don't allow ourselves to be seduced into a narrow see no evil escapism or into a narrow parochial view where we want to put everything on Jesus, go by the hospital, Jesus, go by the prison, and Jesus is saying, you go there, and you be concerned about that. I think we'll be stronger than ever. Many people have questioned the relevancy of the Black church, given what has been played out in our community over the past 25, 30 years. But I'll say after this watershed moment that we had during these past past 12 years, there are new voices emerging. There are those who have been biding their time on the backside of the mountains, if you will, and they're ready to go forth. I'm encouraged by what I see in many of the young leaders, young pastors, and young seminarians, many of whom are sisters, because they've been, for lack of a better word, orientated toward not just the priestly aspect of our churches, but the prophetic. So I believe that what we have to do more than ever is to show the world what it's like to be followers of Jesus, the African liberating Christ, who was concerned about all of us and concerned about the whole person.
Apostle Winston, I love that. Now, if you could quickly just tell us where people could get information about your church. I know you guys are across all the social media platforms, but where can we reach out to you?
Thank you. Of course, our website, greaterworksassembly.org, Facebook at Greater Works Assembly, even Instagram, Greater Works Assembly, Twitter, Greater Works Assembly. Then you can reach out to me, DarylWinstonMinistries.org, or Daryl Winston Ministries on Facebook, and Reverend Nabi on Twitter. And any one of those different platforms will allow you to connect with us.
That is wonderful. Apostle Winston, I want to thank you once again for sharing this relevant information with us.
It's been my joy. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate you for the good work. I'm so honored to be on your show and on this platform, and I am grateful that you're continually doing a great work and impacting the lives of so many. So thank you, Kipling.
Join PBS February 16th and 17th for the 400-year-old story of the Black Church, from its early roots to today's Black Lives Matter movement. Hosted by Dr. Henry Louis Gates, Jr., the series explores the church's powerful influence as the spiritual, cultural, and political epicenter of the African-American community, featuring Oprah Winfrey, John Legend, Kirk Franklin, Bishop Vashti McKenzie, and many more. The Black Church premieres February 16th and 17th at 9 p.m., only on your local PBS station. In Atlanta, it's WPBA and GPB.